Ah, Thursday in New York City on the Progressive Radio Network. It's Insight. My name's Mark Carl. It's a glorious day here. Well, it's a glorious day for now, but we're getting invaded by number 45 in a few hours. Trump's coming back to his city. I don't know why. He must be coming back for the free soap in his hotel room. I don't see why he's coming back here. I don't know. Actually, you know what? Mar-a-Lago, his retreat on the weekend, is closing this weekend, I believe. So he's going to be residing out in, where is it, in Northwest Jersey? Begins with a B. I just got town of it. It's a very affluent town. But I'm surprised he's not going to be going to a more warm destination. But it's warming up here. So we got a great show for you. We're going to be talking about the SBTS walk, wellness walk, this weekend in Freehold Township, New Jersey. We're going to be speaking with clinical director Phyllis Alonji in a few minutes. We're also going to be talking about dirty jeans. Exactly. No, not the jeans that you get that's in your family pool that you wish you didn't have. Like that crazy uncle or, you know, the brother or sister that are... Yeah, okay. We're going to be talking about Abilities Expo coming to New Jersey starting tomorrow for 3 days. It's a great exposition for people with disabilities, their friends and families. Facebook. We're going to be talking about all kinds of things. National Physical Fitness Month. We're also going to be talking about how I need another large, gargantuan cup of tea. So this crazy thing. Have you been reading about this trend? Dirty jeans? So, people are paying like $500 for like working man's jeans. $500! So, I'm thinking, okay, I have like two pairs of these. I keep them in my garage. I do. Because when I work outside, you know, whether it's landscaping or carpentry, I just keep hanging them up. And once in a while, I wash them because to wash them inside my own personal washing machine, you know, it's going to get crudded up. So you can buy jeans nowadays. Yes, we've seen jeans where you can buy them with holes in them, you know, bleached, battered, tattered, you know that. But to actually buy dirty jeans is astonishing. Like, you can't make this up. And for $500, okay, one of Levi's came out with it, and it's like $100. Or what's that really good brand of jeans? I can't remember. Seven jeans. Yes, I don't know if they're still making them, but I remember when I was dating my wife, my then girlfriend, we were walking down Hoboken, and there was a guy on the side of the street with his back of his truck open, and he was selling a plethora of Seven jeans, and my wife was beside herself because they were being sold for like $20. And I remember she bought as many as she could carry because I think Seven jeans are a lot of money. Anyway, so I get a really big kick out of this. People are buying these really awful looking, like nasty, like you need to burn these pair of jeans for $500. All right. I won't spend any more time on this, but I just think it's a funny thing what the American public will go for. It's really hard to kind of predict. Like, somebody is sitting in a board meeting going, just make some god-awful jeans. They won't smell. They'll feel clean, but they'll look like total crap. Hey, you know, we'll make a couple thousand if they don't sell. You know, we'll ship them over to Asia or somewhere else and, you know, give them to charity or something like that. So I say to you, if you want to buy working man's jeans, dirty jeans, be a working man and buy a pair of Levi's or a pair from Walmart or wherever you like to shop for your $40 or $50 pair of jeans. And I'll save you a lot of money. So we all know that Facebook has been going through some hiccups lately. That's for sure. There's been some murders last month. That was live and Facebook streamed. Father murdered his 11-month-old. There's been a bunch of different instances of whether it's actually been streamed, recorded, or written about. Multiple different cases throughout the last several months. Well, Facebook has just vowed to hire 3,000 people to monitor Facebook. Well, you know, I'm just so kind of surprised at this point it's taken this long and this many extreme acts for this to happen. Why wouldn't, I mean, first of all, when you lodge a complaint, if you want to remove something from your feed and they ask you whether it's explicit, it's nudity, you know, you have a few different choices. If something like that comes up, maybe they need to add another drop down box like against the law, violence, inconceivable, whatever. So once those things get generated, it automatically goes maybe to one of these 3,000 people to one of these management officials. It just makes complete sense, because if this keeps happening, I think Facebook has a bigger concern, and or the internet itself, that people will be fined. I mean, we've all been reading about how the net is on the precipice of changing in terms of how we receive it, how we pay for it. Certainly, I had an interview on Insight right here 3 weeks ago or so about how we are tracked, how our DNA, so-called DNA, is tracked or identified. And it could be wrong, because, you know, me, I could be identified by the way I shop and all these algorithms that they have as a 17-year-old boy who lives in Omaha, which is not the case. And a lot of times they get it wrong. But anyway, our identity is out there. So there's a lot of information available and technology available to, you know, to suss this thing out. But when, for example, that murder that took place last week, it took about, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 hours to get this taken down. I mean, come on. It shouldn't have been up there more than a half hour, 30 minutes, the most. I mean, once these requests, not requests, reports start funneling in, maybe it's not streamlined, but, you know, it has to be. I mean, a company, one of the biggest companies on planet Earth, in terms of revenue and their value, I mean, should be able to figure this out, you would think, right? I mean, it's just kind of deplorable when you think about what happens if someone is seeing this who should not see this, whether it's your kid or maybe it's somebody on the verge of maybe doing some self-harm, etc. You know, this should not be out there. It's not the place. Not the place at all. And speaking of social media, I'm really interested in knowing what you use it for. Is it for, you know, social purposes only, birth announcements, weddings? Is it for business only? 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, no matter where you are. And let me know, because I found out about something this morning, and this is, it's an alarming thing, but, and I'm sure we've all experienced this, but I found out about someone who's a couple that were, you know, fairly close to me. I shared a beach house with them years ago, and I know she experienced, went through cancer years ago, I'd say easily a decade, but then I read a post from him today, the husband, that said, "I will always miss and love you," and so I realized, wow, she's gone. So I realized that she died. And I texted a friend of mine this morning on the way into the show. And I said, really hate to ask you this question via text and at this hour, but I'm just really curious and I need to know, did so-and-so die? And they wrote back, yes, a few years ago. So it's interesting how people, you know, obviously put everything out there, all their dirty laundry, all their thoughts that they should not be sharing to the mass public. We all know that. Of course, that salad that they're having for lunch or the fish that they ate and all you see is bones on a plate. Kind of crazy, right? Anyway, so I use it strictly for my purposes, for business purposes. There's nothing on there about my family. And I've spoken about this before because it's my personal choice, because in this era of uncertainty and, I'd say being safeguarded. That and believe me, I understand about people's desire to want to put pictures of Johnny and Susie out there, scoring a winning goal, getting nominated for the National Honor Society, whatever the case may be, first day in college, graduation, you name it. But when they're younger, I just feel like it's a parent's prerogative, certainly, to choose whether to do that or not, and I choose not to because of the obvious implications, because if their identity is put out there, also with their name, I don't know. I just don't subscribe to that. And so therefore, it's just for business purposes. I know a lot of people certainly use it for debaucherous activities. And when I do talks, certainly this time of year, mostly at high schools, about real world expectations to graduating seniors, whether they're going into college, whether they're going into a trade program or their first job out of high school. How to conduct yourself in a professional and accountable manner. Like, you know, okay, the last 4 years of high school were cool, and hopefully you were accountable, you were realistic with your expectations and what people expected of you and how you presented yourself. So now it's a whole different ball of wax. So if you're seen, you know, standing or holding yourself upside down on a keg while there is a funnel being draped right into your mouth and people chanting, chug, 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 chug. Okay, you're not the first one. But if it lives on your Facebook page or whatever social media page it's on, except for the ones obviously to get purged, like Snapchat, then, you know, it's going to come back to bite you in the butt. Job seekers, HR departments. As a matter of fact, a lot of websites now, the most latest up-to-date technology ones, have you put your account in there, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. So they can actually scan and read everything about you before it's part of your resume. I'd say it's equally as important or even more important because it actually visually tells a story of who you are versus the words you can creatively and carefully and over a long time of a period of time choose to define yourself and what you've done. But, you know, pictures tell 1,000 words. Say more than 1,000 words. Millions, zillions of good words because, you know, if you're out there doing things that are just not, you know, up to snuff or something that an employer wouldn't want to be responsible for, or you're slightly on edge and then there's squeaky clean Mary Jones who has a picture of her in front of the library, you know, things of that nature, working for a 4-H club, doing a beach cleanup, you know, things like that, et cetera. Then that makes a different story. But to find out certainly about when people die, and I understand that it's a good thing, but I have agreed, and I knock on wood with this, with certain members of my family, that if something were to occur in our family, that we would not post this on social media. Certainly for a given amount of time, because we believe in the humanity, the personal touch of calling people, reaching out to them, however, or our family and friends, concentric circles of doing that. And we don't agree in that. And believe me, and that's just my opinion. That's would be my protocol of something of that nature. But I guess the upside is that when it's not that immediate, that it does work out well to find out, for the example, hence my case today where I did find out of, not a close friend, but certainly a good acquaintance who did die several years ago. But it's good to know when you find out about someone's wedding and you didn't know they get married and you didn't get invited and you're so happy that you didn't get invited, but you can also attend the wedding because there's 1,562 pictures online. Lucky us. So I had a great talk the other day at a organization of student assistance counselors. They have different names in different states, but in New Jersey, they're called SACs, Student Assistance Counselors, and they specialize in drugs and alcohol and other aspects. They have pivotal jobs dealing with high school students and middle school students. And I really, really commend them on every aspect of their job and their performance and their passion to really impact students' lives because they can be a huge, huge advice and a stepping stone and saving grace for a lot of these kids who, you know, come to them seeking help or are sought out because, you know, someone is displaying signs of mental illness or drug usage, etc. So anyway, I was invited to speak at a SAC meeting recently and give a presentation of all my talks. So I incorporated about 4 or 5 different themes that I talk about, drugs and alcohol, mental illness, overcoming adversity, and celebrating differences. And it went very, very well. And not only was it's nice to present to people in my profession, I'm in their profession, actually, because certainly they have the initials after their names. I always say that, hey, listen, I don't have initials after my name. I'm not an MD. I don't have an MSW, et cetera, but I am an expert in me. Everything I speak about is from personal lived experience. And I'm happy, happy, happy after all these years to share what's made me stronger. My mantra is my difference makes me stronger. But the cool, really cool example and the outcome of that is, you know, I met all these great people after the meeting. They, you know, gave me very complimentary words. But I was about midway home and I got 2 phone calls from 2 people who attended that meeting who hired me. right on the spot for actually two talks a piece. So I got four gigs out of one presentation. So it kind of validates certainly what I do, and I love that. Because even if I didn't get any validation, my validation is speaking to audience members and seeing their faces, pardon me, and understanding that, you know, simple little changes in life, regardless of whether you're a teenager in your 20s or 30s or 50s, regardless of the hurdle or battle that you're facing in life, there's always an opportunity to get help and to change, because somebody out there knows where you are and wherever you've been and where you can go, what opportunity lies ahead. So it was very, very fulfilling to be part of that organization and to do what I do. I mean, to speak to all these schools and organizations about all my life experiences. It's just great. I couldn't think of anything better that I like to do. Equally as important or satisfying for myself is certainly being in radio for what I've been doing for the last two decades. And I love that on multiple levels. So we have the very, very fortunate time and experience to meet Dawn Daugherty, who was not able to be here today, but SPTS Clinical Director Phyllis Elongi is going to be coming up in moments and talking about their first annual walk that's taking place in Freehold Township, New Jersey, right after this. Sure to be changing your ways. And that cheerleader was a real young breed. All the times I can reminisce. All the best things of loving with a sister and a cousin. Only started with a little kiss like this. It's the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Fowler. The show's Insight. Thanks for joining me. It's about 17 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, broadcasting live from New York City in our new, very plush Midtown Studios. Very thankful to Gary Null and a team have put this together in the last 2 months. And they're getting very, very good at it because we move a lot. We're like the gypsy Progressive Radio Network. Hey, listen, it's my very, very exceptional happiness and supreme pleasure to introduce the SPS Clinical Director, Phyllis Elongi. SPTS is the Society for Prevention of Teen Suicide. They've been around since 2005 and are doing an incredible job. Welcome, Doctor.
Well, it's really nice to be here. Thank you so much. I'm really excited about it.
Well, sort of being
we're
here.
We're just thrilled.
We got you as close as we could get you on short notice, right?
Yep.
So, Walk for Wellness, a stride against suicides, taking place this Sunday, May 7th, Turkey Swamp, Freehold, New Jersey. And this is all about just education, enlightenment, and certainly coming together for a really worthy and great healthy cause.
Absolutely. And I think a really important part to add is that it was really the brainchild of our youth council. And our SPTS youth council is in our second year. We're so happy to report. We have 66 students from 21 high schools in Monmouth and Ocean County. And they act really as ambassadors for us. I mean, we ensure that they're not counselors and, you know, that they're ambassadors who carry on our mission and our vision to promote awareness and education in teen suicide prevention.
So, Dr. Elongi,
really cool events.
Oh, yeah, sounds it. Dr. Elongi, explain to me like what their role would be in any given school, an ambassador of this caliber.
Okay, so their role would be to bring, youth suicide prevention education and awareness and what they learn from us and bring it back to their schools and get other kids involved, like, and come up with really great ideas like the walk, which, you know, they have done the work for and it was their inspiration and we just helped them facilitate it. And we're so happy that you're going to be there.
Free labor. I love it.
Yeah.
With so, a mission, you know, and a cause.
Yeah, and you know they are very aware of the warning signs, and you know, part of what we do is, you know, helping educate them and on, you know, the warning signs, what to look for in themselves and identify those signs in themselves, but also in their peers, because we know that peers are going to talk to each other first, and you know that we teach them the importance of having a trusted adult and, you know, connectedness and belonging to organizations like ours, and being involved in activities that are positive and inspirational, we know is a protective factor. So it is a wonderful way to bring all of that into their lives, and then them to spread that to others and to bring the information back to their schools.
SBTS has opened the door. The dialogue has been created. And I think, number one, in any unfortunate situation when you're trying to introduce change, enlighten people, dialogue is the hardest thing. And that's been created. And that is something that, you know, we can't take lightly, because to get teens to talk about something that I think is easier than adults sometimes, because they're much more open about, you know, how they feel, especially with social media. They may not discuss it initially with each other, but it is being communicated in some form.
Absolutely. And, you know, how do you feel confident about talking about something, about addressing anything, is when you know about it, when you're prepared to talk about it, when you feel good about talking about it. So kids make it okay to talk about it. And that's why they're our greatest resource. They're our strongest strength. And they're really our link to education and awareness, because they have their finger on the pulse of what's happening now. And so we really like to tap them as our greatest resource.
And you know, it's interesting. I've met a few teenagers who've approached me after my talk on mental health that have said to me, listen, I'm really happy that, you know, I know all the signs and symptoms, and, you know, and nothing runs in my family that I know of. But you know, I'm glad I'm prepared for that one day, possibly, if it does happen. But they would say to me on two different instances, my friend's father or mother do display X, Y, and Z symptoms. So that's, I mean, it's unfortunate certainly that their friends' parents are experiencing this, but the same token, they're astute enough to pick up on it, whether it's themselves or their friends, you know, who are discovering what their parents are experiencing.
Absolutely. And we really stress the importance of help-seeking skills, you know, and not keeping any secrets. And, you know, when a friend or you're noticing something in someone, that you know what to do. And, you know, that's something that we go through. Actually, we have a teen university, SPTS Teen University, and the Youth Council kids invite friends of theirs who are not already involved in the Youth Council, and we do a series of education with them, and it's a wonderful experience. And so, and the next one coming up is May 24th, from 6 to 8 at the Atlantic Club, and you know, it's of no cost to the participant, but the theme of it is, how do I help a friend in need? And so, you know, it's really important that we get that information out there. And because we make it okay, and kids make it okay to talk about it, and we hope that parents will make it okay, and educators, that kids will feel free and feel confident enough, and, you know, to pay attention to the warning signs, to recognize and identify, and to feel confident knowing what to do.
And I'm sure more information is available at SPTSUSUSA.org. And I'll give that information
out more throughout
the show. So, Doctor, I imagine that you've spoken to so many different audiences nationally, because SPTS is a national organization. I think you're honing a little bit more on localness right now. But when you get in front of teenagers and you start your talk, and I imagine you see a lot of deer in headlight faces, but then people get more comfortable with the notion, because again, there's been more and more dialogue, and then you get the questions, and then you get people coming up to you afterward, and or the emails, and or the follow-up from the teachers or administrators, and you realize how accepting these teenagers are.
Yes, and you know, and how willing they are to share, you know, information about themselves or situations that they've been in. You know, we don't do direct service. We're not a crisis line, but from time to time, we do get people inquiring, and then, of course, we give them our list of resources. But just our kids in the Youth Council and some of their friends have reached out to us at different times, saying they were at a party and they saw someone was struggling, and, you know, what should I do? You know, just the fact that they reach out, that they're are out there on the front lines, but willing to share that with us, experiences that they've had, you know, maybe struggles that they've gone through, their stories of resilience. It's amazing how open and receptive they are.
Dr. Phil Salonji is my guest. My name is Mark Fowler. The show's Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. We're talking about A Walk for Wellness, A Stride Against Suicide, this Sunday, May 7th in Turkey Swamp in Freeland, New Jersey. And of course, the mission of SBTS is to reduce the number of youth suicides and attempted suicides by encouraging public awareness through educational training programs and more. Now, is that something that's really hard to develop, or certainly with all the great and thousands and countless of teenagers you have in your youth councils located everywhere, does that make it easier? Because obviously it's a give and take.
Yes, it does. It absolutely does. And, you know, the more people we reach, the more people we reach through them. And so, you know, it's extremely important getting it out there, and, you know, organizations that are willing to listen and to get us in and, you know, introduce us to other people, all the places that we go and exhibit. It is very important. That's the essence of it. That's how we, you know, promote our vision and our mission.
And it's nice to see events such as this, a walk. It could be a walk or run, whatever the event may be, or the platform. The fact that we get out there, and I have the pleasure of hosting this Sunday, so I hope everyone who's listening, obviously this is a worldwide radio station, so if you're in Guam, we understand if you can't get there. And SBTS.
And the weather's looking up.
Yes,
it is. The weather is really looking up for Sunday,
yeah.
I'm excited about it. And you could bring your dog on a leash. Why not?
And your boyfriend, girlfriend, or both, or whatever you're into,
yeah.
You know? But it's a positive environment. And circumstance. I know sometimes maybe think like, oh, a suicide walk? What's that about?
Right,
but no,
right.
It's very positive. It's great music. It's people coming together,
yep.
You know, sharing and talking, collaborating, exchanging, you know, emails and contact information. I've met people that I've known for a decade or two now because I've met them at different walks of this caliber.
And we need to work on our minds, our bodies, and our spirits.
Yes.
So it's a good way to get some wellness into it, and, you know, and to meet some great people, and it's wonderful. And we'll certainly be there with our smiles on and our hands, you know, outstretched, welcoming everybody.
Yeah, and Doctor, before I let you go, you just touched on something very vital, because as part of National Physical Fitness and Sports Month, May,
mm-hmm. May is also Mental Health Awareness Month.
See that? Exactly. You
mm-hmm.
are just so
mm-hmm.
spot on. The mind, the crucial connection of mind and body, people don't have any understanding to the degree, because, I mean, I went through anxiety, depression, and panic attacks. And I found that even just, you know, exercising more, and I've always been an avid exerciser, but even taking it up a step, just keep things at bay. Just keep your stress level manage, et cetera, your diet. I mean, so crucial to how all these things can cumulatively impact one person.
Absolutely. Holistic health is now really on the cutting edge of research.
Sure.
And mental health and wellness. You know, what we are, what we eat, we are what TV shows we watch, what music we listen to, the people that we hang out with, you know, all of everything that's outside of us, you know, affects us internally. And so we really need to be mindful of relaxation and coping skills and meditation and mindfulness, the things that are really positive ways that we can manage our stress, because we know that stress can always manifest itself in the physical body. And so that's not something that you want to, you know, you want to ignore. You want to listen to your body, and you want to really treat it as a tool for mental health wellness and for your spirit, things that make you laugh and pleasurable experiences, to make sure that you have a nice balance of all three things in your life.
Yeah, that's great and well said, because nobody knows you like you do. You can go to a doctor and they still don't know you. They're going to ask you the protocol of questions and go down the list, but you know you, and you know when you don't feel well, and nobody can be happy every day. It's impossible. You have to listen to your body.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I urge people, if you're hanging out with people, and this goes for adults too, people who are black clouds, energy vampires, you know, that can have a major impact on you.
Negativity breeds negativity.
Sure.
And people can get really stuck in that. And so when that's your mindset, that's the vibration that you really put out there. So you have to think about your own energy. Is it positive? Am I looking at, you know, the glass half full? Am I looking at what's right instead of focusing on what's wrong? You know, I heard once a long time ago that true happiness is being content with what you have.
Mm.
And so when you think about that and that constant, you know, people have a constant dissatisfaction and discontentment, always looking for the next best thing. Like, let's try to really be in the moment. And I think that helps promote mental health and wellness, like overall holistic wellness. When we're really in the moment of where we are in the present and paying attention to that and listening to our bodies.
Absolutely. Well said. And unfortunately, you know, good does come out of bad. In 2005, the two founders had lost teenage children.
Yes.
And they've turned this around to such a positive platform to impact thousands. And, you know, in the 10 years plus, it's done incredible work. And I applaud you for being part and at the helm, along with Dawn Daugherty, executive
yes.
director. And
amazing,
you know.
Amazing woman. Absolutely. You know, and I do want to say this, that, you know, it the mission of the founders, it's an honor and a privilege to be here, you know, because of that and how hard everybody works here to carry that mission and vision. It's an inspiration.
It's a Walk for Wellness, a Stride Against Suicide, this Sunday, May 7th at Turkey Swamp, which is a great venue. There's lots of things to do. Even when you finish the walk, there's boats, there's fishing, there's camping.
Yep.
If you want to make a weekend out of it, if you're in the tri-state area, you want to head down there, log on to SPTSUSA.org. That stands for Society
yes.
Prevention Teen Suicide, USA.org, pre-register, or you can show up the day of. Registration starts at 11 a.m. We'd love to see you, and I'd love to meet you. Make sure you do come up to me and introduce yourself. Doctor, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to meeting you in person.
Okay, thank you so much. And I just want to mention that if, you know, anyone is struggling, they can always call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number at 1-800-273-8255.
Thank you, Doctor. Have a grand day.
Take care. Thank you for having us. I'll
My
see
pleasure.
You Sunday.
Yes, looking
okay,
forward
bye
to
bye.
It. So the Ability Expo is a great event that's actually hosted in multiple venues and states. Houston, Chicago, Boston, D.C. Metro, L.A., San Mateo, and Toronto also in 2018. So it's a great event because it's for people with disabilities and their friends and family. And I've been in attendance probably for 2 or 3 years now. And it's great. I really like it. It's happening tomorrow and Saturday and Sunday in New Jersey, in Edison, New Jersey. They got products and events, education, demonstrations, workshops. And what I love the most about it is that you go around and meet people from all walks of life, all different disabilities, invisible, obvious, people with below-the-knee amputees, diabetes, you name it. You think of it. And there are products, services, and concepts and ideas that can really impact people's lives. There's actually one vendor there. I really, really like this guy. He's very, very cool. He just makes T-shirts all about the disability world. So it could be I rock in my chair, you know, it's a wheelchair, like all these really, really creative T-shirts. And, you know, like in the last 10 years, T-shirts have like taken on a whole new level. Even when the ones you see on your Facebook stream or LinkedIn stream feed that, you know, promote everything that you love in life, because again, everyone's watching you and they know what you like in life. Anyway, so I urge you, if you're in the area in New Jersey this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or in the upcoming states in the next few months, Houston, San Mateo, Chicago, Boston, DC Metro, LA, or Toronto in 2018, log on to Abilities. I think it's abilities.com. I think it's abilities.com. So don't hold me to that. Anyway, so there's all kinds of things like exoskeleton technology. Oh, you don't know what exoskeleton technology is? I bet you Danny does know. Danny, do you know what exoskeleton technology is? You don't? All right. Well, hang loose. I'm going to tell you what it is. It's actually allowing people in wheelchairs to walk vertically, upright. Unbelievable, right? It's bionics. Bionics, really. You can't make this stuff up. So all this stuff is on display. And so if you're a techie person, even if you're not a techie person, it's really, really incredible to see the fact that it's come so far in the last 10, 15 years. And I always say, when I give talks on overcoming adversity, that nobody chooses to be disabled, but there's never been a better time. With my visual impairment, I have my phone next to me when I'm driving that tells me when to make a turn, how many feet. It's my best co-pilot. I love my wife. I love my kids, but nobody's a better co-pilot than my phone because it's great. And of course, my telescopic device, which allows me to drive, which allows me. Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell my wife this. So, honey, if you're listening, check this out. So I'm driving down the road the other day. I'm going to some guy's, he's an audio expert, and I need some cable soldered for something I'm doing in my house. So I'm driving down this back road, and I'm flying. Okay, yes, the visually impaired guy should not be flying down a back road, but I'm probably doing 60 or 70. All of a sudden, I look up, look to my left. I mean, there's nobody around, just pine trees. I see a cop on the side of the road, parked in, his nose sticking out of the trees a little bit. I'm like, oh no, I'm cooked. So I get pulled over and I see the sign 35. I'm like, oh no, I'm really cooked. So he comes over, license, registration, all that jazz. So I hand him my information. And now I'm looking at him with my telescopic devices on. So it looks like the glasses you wear, you know, when a surgeon operates on you, hopefully that's not too often, or your dentist or hygienist, that's what they wear. So he's looking at me going, you know, you were going a little bit fast. He's trying to, you know, keep the conversation flowing as he's looking at my glasses. And I know he's looking at my glasses. And I'm turning right at him, looking at him, going like, please, 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 let me get off because I'm wearing these glasses and you don't think I could have seen the sign, which was the case because I didn't see it until I got pulled over. But I did say to him, I'm really surprised this is a 35-mile-an-hour zone. Hence why I was doing 65, 70, or maybe greater. He's like, yeah, you know, there's been some accidents around here. I was like, what, with who? What, you know, Grizzly the Bear? Smokey the Bear? Anyway, he let me off. So I was like, oh my God, these glasses are amazing. So maybe I should come out with like a very, very cheap, inexpensive pair I can sell on Canal Street around here, make a fortune, and everybody can start wearing these when they get pulled over. It'll work for maybe a year until it gets really, really in vogue, and then the cops will get onto it. But it's a good thing because, you know, I'm not a woman. No, I'm not a woman. My name's Mark. It's not Mary. So when I get pulled over, now, and that's a sexist statement. Yes, I know it's a sexist statement, but hey, whatever it takes to get out of a ticket, because, you know, that would have been huge amount of points, huge insurance, everything. So crazy. How did I get on this? I was talking about the Abilities Expo. Anyway, I want to talk about the founder, David Corse. Great guy, CEO of Abilities. He founded this several years ago, a real insightful, ingenious guy. He saw a demographic, the 55 million people who are underserved in this country. With disabilities, their friends and family, caretakers, you name it. But the 55 million people with disabilities, and that runs the gamut for people with disabilities, but there's a huge niche for these people, services. They have a lot of discretionary income at a certain bracket within that 55 million. Certainly a lot of people can't afford exoskeleton technology because or a wheelchair, a powered motorized wheelchair, because they cost thousands of dollars. Or a leg from cheetah, a cheetah leg, which is on our artificial leg, prosthetic leg, which also allows people to run down a track like they are the fastest sprinter in the world. It does aid a little bit, but you're usually racing against people who also have cheetahs on, cheetah foot. But it's really amazing. So it's a great expo. I hope you get a chance to go by and wherever you live. You can check it out. I think it's abilities.com, and do what you can because it's certainly an eye-opening experience because a lot of people say that, you know, we are temporarily able-bodied, and it's true because at a certain point in our life, we're all going to be disabled, whether we lose our vision from diabetes, knock on wood, just older age sets in. I mean, we're living to 80, 90, maybe even late 90s. Scary thought, really scary thought. Anyway, so more and more technology does exist. Obviously, it's going to be boundless in terms of what they're going to develop. The baby boomers, you know, what an incredible huge demographic and size of the population that need to be served on so many fronts. And I'm a huge advocate for tapping into certainly the older generation, because I feel like seniors, I mean, the word senior, when you hear that word alone, you think someone who is knowledgeable, sage advice, right? Experienced. But then when you put the word citizen after that and you put them together, senior citizen, you think, oh, isn't that nice? They're retired. They're taking it slow. They take 5 naps a day. They may have to buy certain things at their grocery store. That I won't go there. Anyway, but I think our society, and I don't know about other societies, does a real injustice for us, because we really need to tap into the sage experience and invaluable. I mean, we have leaders of companies, Fortune 500 companies, small business leaders, political leaders, mayors, etc., that are, you know, looking for things to do. And I think there's a great underserved population, just like David Corus started Abilities for Persons with Disabilities, providing expositions across the country and in Toronto, that this is an untapped population where business owners could tap into people who ran or were in that field for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. You never know. I mean, look at Clive Davis, you know, music mogul, still working his tail off. He's been in the music for business for over 50 years, you know, crazy. Anyway, so that's my rant on that. So looking for those calls still, always at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Mark Farrell with you. Gary Null comes on at 9 o'clock, and I mentioned this before, it is National Physical Fitness Month and Sports Month, as well as Mental Health Awareness Month. But, you know, it makes me think about Michelle Obama and her great initiative, Let's Move. And I hope it's not getting really destroyed because, you know, obviously, the Department of Health and Human Services, there's a new person at the helm. And I don't know their name off the top of my head, but, it's a time to renew your commitment to a healthy lifestyle. And, you know, if you're sedentary, I mean, you don't need a month of the year, just like you don't need the flip of a new calendar year on January 1st to start something anew. Every time the sun comes up, and the sun doesn't even need to come up, man. It can be like now. I mean, stop drinking coffee. Stop eating, half a jar of peanut butter at one setting. I mean, there's so many different things you can do. Instead of taking the elevator up 3 floors, take the steps. So it's a month of, I guess, just bringing the realization and or making people cognizant of the little nuances, the adjustments you can make in life so that you can become healthier. Because the reality is, you know, if you don't move a lot, you know, just like anything, like your muscles are rubber bands, they don't get elongated. And even if you don't go to the gym and do any weight-bearing exercises, it's really imperative. It's vital to have your muscles have weight-bearing activities. And this could be, you don't need to join a gym. You can be in the floor in your apartment, co-op, garage, house, basement, attic, whatever you got, and do push-ups, modified push-ups, dips, crunches, lunges, sprints, jog, walking, bicycle, treadmill. I mean, there's countless exercises. And don't buy into the things on late night TV, even though I love watching these late night shows. Like, okay, here's Chuck Norris promoting his latest machine with, what was Billy Joel's first wife? Chrissy Brinkley. And I'm like, oh my God, I feel so bad for these guys doing these infomercials, but I still like to watch them. Or these extreme commercials for these DVDs that basically feature plyometrics. Plyometrics are, you know, exercises where you're just jumping and moving like crazy, like a banshee. But the reality is, if you do that 4, 5, 6 days a week, you're going to have issues. Let me just tell you. As a marathoner, as a triathlete, and as a person who's done these classes, that's why I'm a spin instructor and ride bikes. I mean, I've always loved riding road cycling. But your body can only take so much pounding and vertical and what's the word I'm looking for? Any basically jumps and shuffling around, because all your joints get very, very sore. Your tendons and ligaments get overused and they need time to rest. There's a gym I went to recently. They have everybody doing a different type of aerobic classes on this floor. And I walked into the floor. I'm like, oh my God, this is a concrete floor with laminate flooring put on it, which basically is vinyl flooring. So there's no cushion. So if you're at a gym and you're doing any kind of cardio activity in terms of a group exercise, if it's low impact, not a big deal. But if it's high impact, the floor should be a floating floor. It means like your gym floor, it should be wood and it should give a touch, because it should be a raised floor. Not that you would be able to see that it's raised, but it should have some give. So your joints are not taking all the absorption. Because certainly you want to keep doing what you're passionate about. Or if you're new to any sport or any physical activity or workout that you don't want to be doing it for 4, 5, 6 weeks, realize that you've been missing out on something for so long, and then your knee's killing you. And you got tendonitis, or you got a meniscus tear. Then you got to get surgery. Not a big deal. I've had my left knee operated on twice, and the right knee is probably not too far behind. But anyway, you can be out of the hospital a couple hours with a cane. So during this month of National Physical Fitness and Sports Month, you need the time to reflect and get your ass moving. That's right. It doesn't take a long time. It doesn't take a long time. So I also want to speak to you about something I spoke about the other day, and it's been a while since I really thought about this a great deal. And sometimes, you know, when you talk about things about in your past, it kind of stirs up, you know, a lot of thoughts. And I don't know, sometimes obviously it's a good thing to think about things from the past. And sometimes you're like, oh yeah, they're in the past and maybe they should stay there for a reason. But I tell a story that depicts when I came home from my first college frat party. And there was a lot of imbibing going on. Heavy, heavy duty imbibing. So yours truly came back to the dorm. And there was an elevator because there was multiple floors. Door opens, I shuffle in with my friends. And, you know, the conventional method of riding an elevator is you stand there, you push a button, make small talk. But of course, we came back from a frat party. So things are, you know, pretty wild, as you can imagine. I don't know how many people are in the elevator. You know, I don't know, 6, 8, 10, whatever. But all of a sudden, my attention went to the ceiling where there's a hatch. I think it's probably law that they have a hatch in all elevators. So I figured, what's up there? Pop the hatch, climb up top. Yeah, elevator surfing. Don't know if that was a term back then. Don't know if it is now, but it's in my vernacular. Up and down I go, up and down I go. So I tell the story to students in my drugs and alcohol talk about all the recklessness, the debaucherous lifestyle that I lived, and how fortunate I was on so many occasions to have nearly escaped or slightly scathed incidents. And ultimately, to my wake-up call, I realized how incredibly naive, dumb, utterly, it's the only time I use this word, stupid. And I know somebody also in that room is going to yell at me for saying the word stupid, right? Raise your hand if you don't like me to say the word stupid. Yes, my four-year-old is out there. she will chastise me later. Yes, she will. So that's the only time I like to use that word, because when I apply it to myself, I don't like to apply it to anyone else. But that was the most stupid move I could have ever made in my life. I could have certainly caused a fatality for myself, for my friend, my dear friend, who I said cajoled to come up there as well. He went up on top. And then the fire alarm went off, and then the elevator stopped, and then we proceeded to get into a boatload of trouble. I think I was on, this sounds like something from Animal House, double, triple, secret probation, something like that. It was crazy. All I know is I'm sitting in a director of housing's office the next day. And the only reason why I'm in his office is because when I came out of the coma the next day, like 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I think it was a Friday because I didn't have classes, or if I did, I slept totally through them. I'm walking across campus and I see this guy looking at me. He's walking towards me and I realize, you know, here's the head of housing. And he's looking at me. He looks really mad. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me, boom, I guess I blacked out because of the, you know, exercises that took place the night before. And then it came back to me what I did and what I had done. And what he had said to me, he'd said to me, I was no shape or form to be spoken to that night. He wanted to see me first thing that morning. Of course, I slept half the day away for obvious reasons. And then I met with him. And that's when the I got off scot-free. Scot-free because I had to really watch my P's and Q's for, I think, 2 years. I think so. Basically said, if I do the slightest thing wrong for 2 years, I would be out. And so I don't think I told that story to my family. I think actually half my family or more does not know that story. I'm talking about my siblings, and my mother certainly does not know that story. But it, you know, it just shows that when you are under the influence, that you make really, really incredibly poor decisions. And I was reading something the other day. Of course, we are aware of drunk driving. We're aware of texting and driving. We are aware of under the influence because of medical marijuana, et cetera. But there's a new thing out, a new term called drugged driving. And I mentioned this quickly, very briefly last week, because this is becoming something that's more and more common. And officials and or legislators are trying to determine on what they can do to determine whether somebody is drugged driving. Because right now there are some tests in beta test or beta mode to determine whether someone is high on cannabis, marijuana, et cetera. And even if there is not a smell, because if kids vape nowadays, that there's no smell. Like in high schools, when counselors and or administrators walk into a bathroom, you know, it's not obvious if kids are vaping with pot because there's no evidence of smell. So, but there are tests certainly available. Wait, are there tests available for that? No, they're not. That would have to be a blood test. And so it would have to be agreed upon by the parents, et cetera. And that's not usually the case. But this is a whole new thing. So now as a motorist, you know, you're driving down the road. Just this morning, I was going to the gym at 5:15 in the morning. There was a guy in front of me, maybe like 25 yards. And half his car was going over the yellow line, then it went over the edge line. So he was obviously either falling asleep or most likely on his phone. So I flick him the high beam several times to at least say, hey, I'm not a cop, I'm not going to do citizen's arrest, but at least for me to let them know, hey, jerk, there's somebody behind you who knows you are not paying attention to what you're doing and you could cause injury to yourself, me, and or an oncoming car. So wake the F up. I mean, come on, really, it's bad. So now we have all these things. And now, you know, as a cyclist, I got lights all over my bike in the daytime, blinking white lights, blinking red lights, because, you know, when you get under a canopy of trees, you really want to be visible. And on a hot, a bright, sunny day, sometimes when motors go under like a canopy of trees, your eyes have to adjust a little bit. So, you know, it makes it a little bit more present, the cyclist. But you just need to be as present as possible. But the point is that, you know, with all these different things, you have to worry about people not paying attention because they're talking on the phone. And you still see people holding phones up to their ears all the time. And now drug driving, add that to driving under the influence, DUIs. I mean, come on. Can't we just get these self-driving cars out really quick so everybody can do everything they want in the confines of their car instead of driving? Right? I plead all the engineers out there in the world. What do they call it? Autonomous cars. Autonomous cars. Yeah, that's what they are. So we want those. I know the Teslas are out there, but, you know, they're not. I don't think their perfection's really there. I remember reading a few months ago that there was a guy driving a Tesla and he died because his car was going right down the road and he went underneath and or right into the side of an 18-wheeler. And the 18-wheeler was white. So the 18-wheeler by the computer in the Tesla was determined as an overpass because I guess the way the light was hitting it, et cetera. So it never slowed down and the occupant, you know, was fatal. fatally injured or died. You can't say fatally injured, right? Because, I mean, injured sounds like you're going to survive. No, just dead. Just dead. So Tesla, I don't know, man. I don't think I'll be buying a Tesla any day soon. Not that I would buy it anyway for its self-driving and or the fact that it's just a Tesla. I mean, I think the guy, is it Nick Tesla? I forget his name. Anyway, the guy's pretty brilliant anyway. But autonomous cars need to be developed and or put on the marketplace very, very soon because, I mean, what else are we going to do? People are going to be, we got drug driving, drinking and driving, preoccupied driving, you know, picking your nose and driving. I mean, what else is there going to be? People are going to be starting to grill in their car. I want my steak medium rare. Oh, two hot dogs. Yeah, the Coors in the middle seat. I mean, they're going to be doing everything besides driving and paying attention. Doesn't anyone have any fear? I mean, fear should be a motivating factor when you get behind a wheel. Like after you have a near miss, when that heart is almost jumping out of your skin, it makes you slow down, makes you pay more attention, right? So I just don't get it how these people can feel like they're in these multiple 1,000-pound vehicles, 5,000-pound vehicles with some of these SUVs, the sizes of them. Going down the road, barreling down the road, crossing down low lanes and going on a warning track. You know, you hear the rumble strip and they're just hanging out there. Like, don't you hear that you're on the rumble strip? Like you may want to consider moving back on the road. That noise is not coming from your speakers in your car, you idiot. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed my rant today. Really, if you want to take part in this walk that's happening this weekend, the Walk for Wellness, a stride against suicide, is happening again Sunday, May 7th at Turkey Swamp in Friel, New Jersey. You can log on to SPTSUSA.org. Can you do me a favor, Kelsey? Could you send the youngest member of the Farrell family in here? We want her to say something very, very important. Can we cajole her to come in here? All right. Kelsey, do me a favor. Can you just dip that music down a little bit? Okay, here's a future broadcaster coming at you, and you repeat after me. P.
P.
R.
R.
N.
N.
The Progressive Radio Network.
The Progressive Radio Network.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
For Gary No.
For Gary No.
Have a great day.
Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to my daddy.
Thanks for listening to my daddy.
Let's give it up. Yay, she did a great job. My name is Mark Farrell. You can always check out any of my archives on prn.fm under the Insight page. But to have me speak at your school, college, corporation, or organization, camp, alternative program, and more, check out markfarrellmotivation.com. Markfarrellmotivation.com. Have a grand day. Goodbye.